This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Don't At Me, but David Diggs and Rafael Casal are the greatest on-screen duo of all time. Talking to both of these fantastic actors about their movie Blindspotting right after the theme song. Hit it. Wow. Okay, Mom, Dr. Simeon, close your ears. Y'all motherfuckers are on one, okay? I just saw Blindspotting. My mind is blown. It's fine. I'm sitting here with, like, the dynamic duo that we have been needing and have been waiting for, David Diggs and Rafael Casal.
Nailed it.
Nailed it.
Look at that.
So you guys just made a movie called Blindspotting. You didn't just make it. You've been working on it for like 9 years, right?
Long time.
Talk to me about what it's about. Tell the listeners what Blindspotting is all about.
Blindspotting is the story of two lifelong friends, yes. Colin and Miles, who have grown up together in Oakland.
Yep.
Colin is on the last 3 days of his probation for a violent crime.
And you play Colin.
I play Colin. Mm-hmm. Rafael plays Miles. For those of you who can't see me, I'm black.
He's an African-American.
Rafael is white. What? They're best friends, and they're working as movers in a rapidly gentrifying Oakland. And the story is about how their friendship is challenged after Colin, my character, witnesses a police shooting of an unarmed black man while he's headed home from work one night. Towards the end of his probation, and sort of about how their, like, shit spirals outward.
Let me just tell you, if you're listening, that's not even begin to encompass what the movie, because like that's the spine, right? That's like the through line. But the movie is also like this. It's poetry, and it borders on being like a spoken word musical of sorts, and it's episodic in like the best cinematic way. And you guys are getting into all kind of stuff. It's in Oakland. It feels like a portrait of Oakland that I have never seen in a movie before. And also the people who inhabit it. First of all, can we just acknowledge that you're out here, David, snatching Tonys for, you know, the super off-Broadway play, Hamilton, I think it was called?
Yeah. Some under-the-radar shit.
I haven't heard of it. But
it did, yeah.
And Rafael, like, low-key, you're like, you know, a preeminent spoken word artist. And by the way, I looked at your IMDb, and you have, like, way too many fucking credits. You're, like, an actor, assistant director, producer, cinematographer.
I was, like, behind the camera doing a bunch of really random shit for,
just
like,
out here.
7-8 years, dude. Yeah. And which I never talk about. Yeah, like, you came out of nowhere. How do you make films? I was like, we've just been shooting shit.
Look at your IMDb. It's like he can do all of the things. Yeah. That's how you make movies. That's how you get them made. Yeah. And 9 years ago, y'all got together and started to make this movie. What gave you the audacity to put something like this in the screen and think that you could get people to watch it?
It was due to it really wasn't our idea. Like, that's the thing, is like, you know, our producers, when they were in their early 20s, found me on YouTube. Like the early days of YouTube, like poetry and music on YouTube, when like having a million views was a big fucking deal.
Yeah.
And Jess Calder, who they had just done this movie called The Whackness, which was about a weed dealer in New York, and who's like pushing around a cart and like dealing weed out of it. It was like a summer of love story. Ben Kingsley.
Oh, Ben Kingsley.
Sorry, Ben Kingsley.
It's a good movie. Yeah.
So they did The Whackness with Ben Kingsley, and we're looking for another film to do. And Jess found my poetry stuff, and she was like, "I think this kind of writing is super interesting to try it out in film. And they're really non-conventional people. Like they like artist-led filmmaking.
Yeah.
So they reached out to me. I sort of thought I was getting catfished, but whatever. Met up with them. And we started talking about trying to find a way to make a movie that had this language in it, which is something I think poets had thought about for a while. We came off the tail end of Saul Williams doing Slam and that showcased poetry, but not as a convention of the film. It was always like the person in the film was a rapper or was a poet or something, and that didn't really appeal to me. And then Diggs and I are already working on everything else together, so I'd mentioned this to him a bunch, like, oh, when I figure out what this is, we'll all do it. And then 2 years later, they were putting out a documentary, and they needed somebody to come open up the show, and I wasn't available to be there. And so I was like, well, like, I can't make it, but my boy, he's not going to do no poems for you. He don't fuck that poetry shit. But but he's a rapper, and if there's no beat, I mean, like, what do you care?
Right, right.
It's the same
Nobody's
deal.
Gonna know the difference.
It's very heady stuff.
You're going to be fine.
It's going to sell just fine. He's interesting looking. This will go well. They hung out and super hit it off, and then they were like, hey, we really like David. Would you ever, I don't know, do this movie with him? And I was like,
great idea.
God,
like,
that's a good, I had
already, like,
never occurred to me that David should be heavily involved.
Wow.
And then Oscar Grant had just been killed a few weeks earlier at the turn of the new year. And so we had this, we knew we wanted it to be about the Bay and Oakland specifically. The conversation in the town was Oscar Grant, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And we knew that we wanted to write it, and they were really excited about, like, us being the protagonists. And so that was sort of and we knew that poetry was going to be the spine, and that was the prompt. And then it was really 10 years of them, like, supporting and pushing and drafts and almost getting it made 3 or 4 times.
Yeah.
And attaching directors, and then that falling apart for some reason, or the funding falling apart. Or the most important thing for us was always, like, we love Jess and Keith, and so we wanted to maintain our friendship. So every time we couldn't make the movie, we were like, all right, let's not get in our feelings about it anymore. Let's just keep our friendship and keep pushing, and we'll make something eventually together because we want to work together. Mm-hmm. This last year, really, because of a drunk text.
A drunk text?
We had really, like, walked away from this movie entirely. The last time we were going to make it was right before Diggs was going to do Hamilton. And then Hamilton blew up. We were like, well, we're not doing this movie this summer. This is sort of going to take up a lot of his time.
Right.
So I think somewhere in the fall, Keith was doing, like, a Q&A on Twitter, and someone asked him what was the script he most regretted not making.
Oh!
And he added us. And he said that working title of the script at the time was Running Down. And
we were, like, way pissed. We were like,
not like pissed, but we were just like, we wanted to make it.
Like, it ain't our fault we didn't make this movie. Like, what are you talking about?
So you sent
here?
The drunk text.
No.
So we've just.
Sorry for assuming that you sent the drunk text.
As if I
didn't even see the movie. I'm sorry.
Your blind spots are showing right now, right?
For those listening, I just accused the black guy of sending the drunk text. So. You know, don't at me about that.
I would have been high.
I was about to make that joke.
Hashtag same. Okay. Wait, so who said the text?
So hell of time went by and the Oscars rolled around. Everybody wanted Moonlight to win.
Yeah.
Everybody wanted Moonlight to win.
Well, not everybody.
Well.
There were some very sad faces on that stage that night.
Anyone who truly loves jazz music wanted Moonlight to win.
Or musicals, or dancing, or singing.
Let me tell you something.
Okay,
we're going to get to that at the end.
I don't feel that strongly about
listen,
it.
Listen, I love me a musical, but if Moonlight wasn't about to win, I was about to throw something.
It's just, here's the thing. Moonlight was just too good of a movie.
It was too good. To
get slept on. Too interesting. So I was sitting there with my girlfriend at the time. We were drinking, watching the Oscars, and La La Land won. Mm-hmm. And we were just like,
the system, this.
We were like, oh, lives down to our expectations again, America.
Like, all this talk about the way the Academy is like, and then the switch happened, and I was so faded. I was like, yes, like, good movies win, and somehow that sparked this. I got on the group thread, and I was like, we have a Moonlight. Just let it go. Forgot about it. A couple of days went by.
Now, what thread is this? Like the
I don't even think Diggs is on this thread. I think it's me, Jess, and Keith.
Okay, all right. So this is one of those like secret like actor Illuminati threads.
No, it's just sort of our thread with the producers. But because that was the craziest time of Diggs' life.
Yeah, they kept me off.
We just kept him off of like quick threads.
I wasn't going to respond.
Why? Because you were doing theater or whatever.
Yeah, I was doing some play.
Yeah, middle of Hamilton and doing TV stuff.
That's right.
They hit me back a couple of days later and we're like, well, do you guys still want to do that movie? We're like, we never not wanted to do it. Of course we want to do it. And they flew out to New York. They were like, here's the budget. It's like ready to go. Like we can shoot it in June if you're willing to do it.
I had 22 free days in June. That was it for the whole year. Those were the 22 free days I had.
You know what's crazy, man? I just got to interject really quick because like that's my story too. It was like Dear White People was just sitting around for a while. Yeah. And then one day it was like, hey, we could do it like next week.
Right now.
Yeah. And I was like, okay. Like, I mean, my DP who's shooting the movie I'm working on right now, he was reminding me that we hired him a week before we started shooting, you know?
Because
you
got to
go,
Carlos,
man. You
got to
go when the door opens.
Crazy. Yeah. Then you have, you know, luckily.
Hurry up and wait, man.
But at least you're sitting on the idea long enough that like it starts to come back.
You're ready, right? You know how to.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. This movie feels so. It's steeped, man. It's like it's got so many ideas in it. And the thing that's crazy is you guys are dealing with, you know, an unarmed police shooting. And yet, I feel like you guys are saying stuff about race in this movie. You're airing some dirty laundry. Like, speak about Don't At Me. Like, people are going to be atting you about a couple things from this movie, which in the best way. Yeah. But, like, you know, you showed me something that I never knew how to really even put in a movie, which is this sort of. It seems like in Oakland, and I've certainly seen this in friend groups, like, you know, black culture is sort of, it's just a language that isn't even race-based at a certain point. And you got people in this movie, you know, saying nigga, and who are not black, and sort of like on many different angles of the race identity spectrum that honestly, it's complicated. It's complicated. Are you worried about anybody coming at you? How the Q&A's been?
The Q&A's have been good. Man. I think the most fascinating part of some of the responses early have been some of the trip ups of the way that people have talked about characters in press, which like shows a little bit of their biases. Like the descriptors that they use, either being like overly safe in their description of Colin, or like overly condemning Miles.
Yeah. And Miles is the character you play, Raphael.
Yeah. And I find it really, really fascinating the word choices that people use to describe, you know, to describe a character when they feel like maybe they're safe from
like what?
Exposing like a bias. What? This is a lot to unpack, but like there was one review that referred to Miles as a hood rat. Mm. I just went, why did you feel comfortable saying that about Miles?
Right.
What attributes of his do you associate with hood ratness, and why do you feel like?
Well, here's my Don't At Me. So, you know, David, you play a character who, you know, is on probation. It's sort of the last days of his probation. And we find out that your white friend actually had a lot to do with it, Miles. And there's a scene. There's a scene towards the end of the movie where your character sort of like reads Miles for filth. And it's basically like, I don't know if I want to give it away, but it's basically like, you're a nigga. You are. And the weird thing is, I was thinking it. Like while I was watching the movie, I was like, oh my God, he is like such N-word. But the character is white, you know? And it was just such a mindfuck because I've encountered this in life and I never thought I would see it in a movie. And
if there was any other show, I would think it would be in, it would be your show.
I know. But the thing is, you know, my show takes place at an Ivy League. So there's certain characters that just don't make it into that milieu. Mm-hmm. But like the white guy who sort of feels very comfortable in black culture, black dialect, whatever, almost like, you know, I've met white guys who I'm like, okay, you know what? You might be a little blacker than me. I'm just going to be honest. Like if I ran into Miles at a party, I'd be like, you know what? You got this one. Like I'll take, we can do a little race swap. It's cool. But like, where did that come from? Like, did y'all have something to say with this?
Well, I think more, that's one of the oldest scenes in the, you know, that was like a fever dream. Rafa calls me at like 4 a.m. and is like, I got like 8 lines of dialogue, but like I think Miles and Colin should have this conversation. Mm-hmm. He like sends this like text to me. I was like, yeah, let's do that. Like, you know, but it was kind of really about, it was a facet of a race conversation being had between like two friends that got to skip steps, right? Yeah. We didn't have to start at like why white people can't say nigga. Like Miles doesn't, that's
he
not
doesn't
a thing. Like he doesn't, like that's not a thing.
And he knows why.
And he knows why and he understands the history of it. That's not the conversation they're having. The conversation is about why you, what you don't understand is that your actions when they are involving me have different consequences despite us being exactly the same. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Despite us growing up together and having the exact same experiences, like the world is not that world right now. And like, we're in different kinds of danger. Like we're both in danger, but our dangers are different.
And are you indicting anybody with this? Is this a message for people in any people in particular, or this is just
in the world? I think that it's just a conversation we hadn't seen before, and one that these two were particularly able to have.
Yeah,
that this particular relationship that we don't see on screen very often either was one that like these two could have, so it was important to get in there. But I don't think of it as an indictment so much as just like a. Shit is complicated, and friendships are complicated, and male friendships are complicated. You know, like there's so much shit going on with that.
What's funny is that the scene isn't really about. Well, I mean, it's about whatever you want to make it about. I think you know wherever your entry point is valid. I think the thing that I find at its boiled core is really there's this gap between two people that are super close to each other, and they just need to close that gap.
Yeah,
like you're right that Miles had a hand in what happened with Colin and why he went to jail. But if you roll the tape, it's a small hand.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know,
Colin did that shit.
Colin did not look at Miles for help.
Yeah.
He's on this dude.
And Miles joined in.
And Miles is an accomplice.
Yeah.
You know, but they're accomplices to each other their whole lives.
Their whole life.
It's really now we've compounded. It's not just that Colin is black in Oakland and it's gentrifying. And he's on, you know, now he's on probation.
Mm-hmm.
And the gap that now needs to close is like, hey, you know that way we've been running around our whole lives? The context is different.
Mm.
And it's like,
about growing up.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, just like, I read this one this morning that said, you know, Miles will never face any consequences for his actions. I was like, that's not true.
Not true.
Don't negate poor white people and their experiences in this country. They will go to jail.
Here's the thing.
It will not happen as quickly. It will not happen in the same circumstances. But like a poor white dude with anger issues from being broke and probably with like in a single parent home and being poor and having a kid in Oakland and getting pushed out of his neighborhood is justified in his anger.
Well, that's what I love about the movie is because, and I asked about the indictment because the thing about the movie is that like, you can take away so much from the movie, but the fact is you guys are just being really, really honest. And you're putting conversations on screen that people have. And you know, that's what I love about it. Because, yeah, Miles is dealing with classism, you know.
Yeah.
And, of course, you know, Colin is dealing with classism and racism.
Yeah.
And it's complicated. And the scene, man, the gentrification of Miles. Like, the scene where... There's a black guy.
The gentrification of Miles is the sequel
now.
There's a scene where a black character sort of assumes that Miles is just like all the other white hipsters at this party, kind of adopting, you know, black culture and sort of talks down to him. And it was this really interesting scene because it was like in that moment, this black character who is dealing with societal pressures that Miles isn't dealing with.
Yeah.
They're both dealing with it. But there's like a moment where Miles is, at least on the social ladder, beneath this guy.
For a second.
It was so interesting.
I thought that clash is so fascinating to me.
It's conflicts I've never seen before. I don't want to give anything away, but for me, like the titular scene where, you know, Colin is talking to... You know, this girl who is, you know, her opinion of him is very important. And you guys are actually breaking down Blind Spotting. Can you give
the listeners at home,
like, give me like the, what does Blind Spotting mean to you?
Well, you know, Blind Spotting is Val, who's Colin's ex-girlfriend in the film, is studying psychology, and it's what the slang term that she creates in order to remember this phenomenon of Rubens vase, which is like psych 101. It's like you'll see it in your textbooks, college kids. Like it's a it's a picture of a vase, or it's two faces looking, the silhouettes of two faces mm-hmm. looking at each other, depending on which you see first.
And face vase.
Face vase.
Face vase.
And the and the
strong campaign for that to be the title.
Yeah, I was really pushing for it. I was outvoted. But the theory is that all of your life experience leading up to the point when you first see this face vase is like what gears you to see either one or the other.
Yeah.
And then someone will point out the other one to you and you can see both, but you have to work to see both. You'll never see both at the same time. And you, even if you know the other one's there, you have to work to see it. And so, you know, that resonates through a lot of things in the film. For us, it's really just about empathy. That's about, in order to understand someone else's experience, even someone whose experience is very similar to yours, there's stuff that you don't see that you can see, mm-hmm. but you have to work. It's never going to happen. It's never just going to happen. You're not going to wake up one day and understand this experience. You have to, that's what a blind spot is. You have to actively turn your head to see
something. How do we get people to work to see the other thing that they don't see?
That's a choice, man. Like we were talking about this last night at the Q&A, this idea that like the function of any movie that's a conversation piece is not to, I always just use the extreme example, like if I'm sitting here with a Trump supporter, I don't expect to change their vote. Mm-hmm. That is too wide a gap. Mm-hmm. The best thing we can have is a civil conversation and be like, look how civil we are. Look how calm our discourse was, and no opinions get changed. But what we can do is narrow the gap between people who are seemingly all on the same team, but are missing the highest priorities for each other. The thing that Miles is missing is that the highest priority for Colin is to stay alive. Mm-hmm. Miles is existing in a longer game, and Colin is living minute to minute, mm-hmm. and Miles just doesn't get the other, there's the threat that Miles is already under, and that is enough to completely consume him, right? Being poor, feeling like your context is being ripped away from you, feeling your identity being taken away from you, is in itself overwhelming.
Yeah.
So much so that he's not even realizing that there's another stack. That's all that plus another stack on top of Colin.
Right.
And until they can close that gap, they can't sort of drive off into the sunset together, right? That's the function of the final shot of the movie. It's like now we can move forward because we're in the same place. And I think a lot of times the joke I made last night was like, this is the white liberal thing is like, you are in theory on the same team as people of color who are also liberals, but why is it that there are, your list seems to be in a different order of priorities than everyone else's?
It's like the colorblind thing. It's like, I'm colorblind, I don't see race. Well, could you?
Right. Yeah.
Could you see
we
it?
We would rather you
What's
see
the
that.
Thing? It's skipping the important step, right? Yeah. It's like, well, let's just get rid of the thing that divides us. It's like, you can't do that. You have to address the thing that divides us. Not
Say it
skip
again.
It, you know? And that's the, I think that's the thing about awareness is just how do we have these really nuanced conversations between people who do actually want to be on the same team. And
the people we've lost, let them go.
You know, I just think that's not where the energy is most useful.
Yeah.
If we're talking about changing legislation and changing systemic mm-hmm. problems, it's about votes. It's about groups of people having a unanimous idea mm-hmm. and standing behind it. And right now we're so divided even.
You brought up last night this like divide you see like projected all the time between feminism and black feminism, right? Which is like like that's one of these things. You guys are, you want to be on the same team actually.
Yeah.
And we could get that, we could maybe get there.
But you're tripped up. Like, but people get tripped up when you tell them they're blind to something. That's what it is. It's like when you say, hey, woman, white woman, I as a black woman am having a different experience than you, and the thing that you're talking about doesn't actually reach me.
Well, and this
and
is
then
where,
we get into a fight about who's racist and sort of.
And this is where art comes in, we think, right? Is that if you make a thing that's like, oh, that happened right there, right? Not this that's happening between us right here, but that thing that happened on that screen or in that book or in that whatever, we can talk about that.
Yeah.
As it's a proxy, right?
Yeah,
it's like we don't have to put this on us at least to start the conversation, and then it's like
it's well, about Colin maybe and Miles,
and then everyone has blind spots.
Yeah,
you know.
Wow. Okay, this conversation's been amazing. Lots of tea to spill. We will be right back with Rafael Cazal and David Diggs. Stick around. Okay, you're back with Don't At Me. I am still Justin Seaman, as far as I know. Okay, really quick. who can say nigga? Who can say the N-word?
Black people.
Only black people?
Well, this is where it gets tricky, right? Yeah. I mean, because I think there's this one, I don't know. Do we give this joke away?
Like, no.
Okay,
no.
I won't give it away. But there's a mention of it at another point in the film that, like, anyway.
Oh, shoot, I'm going to say it. Okay,
you know what I'm saying? That hints at this, yeah. too, like, publicly, party line, black people.
Mm-hmm.
What you do with your friends, you know what I'm saying? Like,
Filipinos in the Bay.
Context is everything. Filipinos in the Bay, come on.
In the Bay, guys.
Come on down.
I have walked through
groups of Filipinos where I was like, wait, what?
Yeah. And if you're friends with it, if you're in that group, like,
it's cool.
I have friends who I don't.
Let's push it a little further, at least in terms of the Bay. Like, When V Nasty and the White Girl Mob were out on all the blogs, you know, and V Nasty was getting accosted for saying the N-word, it was a lot of black Bay Area people coming to her defense.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not... And I think the conversation got sort of twisted up because it was like, can she say it on the internet? And it was like overwhelmingly no.
Right.
But all the local folks were arguing that she's... I think it was Mr. Fab who said this. It was like, she's really from the town. She can do that.
Right.
Which is an interesting argument for the use of that word.
Right. Yeah.
It was like, now we're talking about authenticity.
Mm-hmm.
Not whether or not it is appropriate.
Yes.
And a removal of a word from its history and from a race that didn't choose it anyway. And like, honestly, I don't care.
Mm-hmm.
Language to me is about the context, right? It's about how the choices you're making in how you're using it. So I'm fascinated by every individual's relationship
mm-hmm.
to nigga, like as a thing. I think that is fascinating, and those are always things I'm interested in unpacking with people. But
it's
like,
it's complicated.
But you also,
because
publicly, no black people can say it.
That's why I love this. That's why I love calling the show Don't At Me, because like there is this like public personal thing about kind of all of these issues. Because I mean, anybody black knows that there are circles of people where people who are not black use the word, and depending on who those people are and where they come from and what the context of the friendship is, you don't always check them.
Yeah. I have, you know, like I have white friends, a couple who feel like they will say it only if they're quoting a rap lyric, right? And they won't.
Which I low-key hate, by the way.
My impetus has always been to hate that, except as an artist, and a lot of these are other artists, and talking to them, like their justification is like, they're not walking around quoting it so that they get to say nigger, right? They're like, this person chose this word,
okay,
and it's different than the N-word.
I've seen some karaoke performances in my day.
They would never do it at karaoke. You know what I'm saying? Like, they're not those kind of white people.
You know, this conversation gets deep, though, because you know how many times I wrote it?
Yeah. Well, you know what? You'll never reach the number that Quentin Tarantino has written.
That's a good point.
Both in dialogue and in action lines. It's fine. I mean, the crazy thing is, like, internationally, too, like, when you hear, like, black music being played all around the world, like, because they have really no real political relationships with the word. I mean, everyone says it, you know? Yeah. I mean, like, I've been to so many bars or clubs and they're just saying it, you know what I mean? Because it doesn't mean the same things to them.
No.
And so you kind of think about, well, okay, if I'm an artist and I'm using the word in my work, especially music that people are meant to sing along to, I mean, in some ways, aren't you putting it out there for public consumption?
I mean, I've never had 10,000 people at a stadium, but what mm-hmm. Most of the rappers that I love that I've gone to see, like, they seem to not have a problem with it. They know that that line's coming up, and they ask for the call and response, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, there must be some permission moment, at least from the artist.
Right? Is there a sanction space? Right here, right now, in front of me, I give you permission to say this. Live your best life, white people.
Didn't Kendrick invited that girl on stage to spit his verse not too long ago, and she said the N-word, and he was like, whoa! and kicked her off stage. So the whole crowd can say it as a chorus, but you can't say it alone.
That's crazy.
That's Kendrick's line.
That's it.
Y'all, this shit is extremely complicated. That's one. All right, I'm going to switch gears for a second, because this is the most beautiful heterosexual intellectual romance story I've ever seen in my life. Like, I'm obsessed with the two of y'all. Like, for real, I need a show. I need sequels. I need
to see.
You
know what the best moment was last year at Sundance. Somebody walks up to me and they go, "Hey, man, where's your platonic life mate?"
Yes.
And my face just dropped and I went, "How have I never thought of that?" Oh,
it's fully adopted that guys.
No, it's adorable. Okay. The two of you are adorable. And I mean, when did it start? Like when did the spark happen? You know, like when did we fall in love, guys?
Yeah. Raphael was running a studio, you know, as most. Wow.
It's like Pretty Women.
Who's the, wait a minute.
You're Julia Roberts.
I feel like I'm Julia Roberts.
Damn it.
All right. So
Julia North Julia would beg to differ.
So you're running a studio.
Yeah. This is like right after I got back from college. So 2004. Or something.
I was like running around on tour a lot. So I just had enough money to open this studio with a couple of my friends. We knew of each other in high school, but we're 4 years apart. He's a senior, I was a freshman. So we didn't, it's not like we kicked it or anything. We just were sort of both in that poetry scene as he was on his way out and I was on my way in. But when he got back, one of my friends in high school, his older brother and Diggs are the same age and they're friends. They ran track together.
Justin's in the movie. He's next to Utkarsh during the retelling.
It's the two of them.
So
Justin, I would be over at his house hanging with his brother and he was like, "You know, Diggs is back from college. You know, here's a bunch of music that he recorded. You should have him come through the studio. I think you guys would get out on some music." And I was probably like, "Yeah, whatever." But he came through. I think it was probably like 8 or 9 at night. We just like stayed there all night and made a bunch of music. Probably started like 4 or 5 different songs. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of like, I don't really remember it going like a slow build to working on everything. It was just like, okay. And then the next day, we did plays together, albums together. We like, you know, like went on tour together. We, you know, and anything artistic that one of us was doing, the other one was doing. And there was like YouTube series stuff.
Before Berkeley or after Berkeley? Because y'all went to Berkley together or did
we went to Berkeley High School. But we were 4 years apart.
So this is, yeah.
Got it. Okay.
So this was after. So he went to Brown. And then when he got back, I was probably 18 and you were like 22.
Yeah.
We started a band. We like put a whole band together, got a bunch of our friends in it. You know, we opened a few more studios moving around Oakland, you know, sort of collecting people as we went and started playing shows. And then I was making sort of half my living on the road and half as like a post-production videographer, like shooting music videos for people and shit. And so then we started shooting like our own music videos but then we had to cut them and edit them. And then we'd shoot short films and we'd cut them and edit them and sketches and shit like that.
And I was like in the theater scene in the Bay Area, so I was like making half my living doing plays and the other half like substitute teaching, you know what I'm saying? So but I was through all those connections being like, there's this theater thing happening, like maybe we should all like come here and get to, so you know, and I'd be working with a lot of sort of local directors, so I had inlets in that world. And then we had like a mentor in common, Mark Bamuti Joseph, who founded Youth Speaks, which is an organization we both worked for at different points and like came up through. And
what is Youth Speaks?
Youth Speaks is a nonprofit literary arts organization. So they go into high schools and they get kids on poetry as a mechanism for getting you to express yourself, right? It's like, it's a big through line for the film, this idea of making something sound pretty so people will listen.
Yes.
And Mark Bamuti Joseph,
he's really the reason,
came and started that workshop at Berkeley High my freshman year, Diggs' senior year.
Listen, it's like, to me, it's the summer of like, the weird colored people movies.
Yeah.
Which I love because Sorry to Bother You is out here making $1 million in 16 theaters.
Yeah.
You guys come out with Blindspotting July 20th.
Yep.
We got BlacKkKlansman in August. In the TV world, we got Donald. We got Terrence Nance. You know, we have me. Yeah. Shameless plug. But
now.
This is a summer I've kind of been waiting for because, as I've mentioned before, I'm kind of boycotting the sequels this summer. But the fact that you can go into a theater and see a movie like this is so exciting.
I think there's a couple movies to see like that. Like, I remember we keep like
in the same
these,
theater. We're going to, you know what I'm
saying? Yeah.
Like, both us and Sorry to Bother You are going to be in the same
theater.
I went to see Sorry to Bother You and saw our trailer at the top of the movie and was like, this is amazing.
That's beautiful.
This is nuts. And there's like every once in a while I see an article that like, it's like, if you're going to see one this summer, stop. Yeah. Stop.
Full
this
stop.
This pitting against bullshit is so stupid. No. It's a bunch of great movies.
But by the way, go see every single superhero sequel that comes out.
Right. Yeah, right. Yeah. Don't just pick one.
Don't pick one. Why would you pick one?
Yeah.
See them all. They're all the same movie.
And I just
saw
Sorry to Bother You. Like, it now more than ever, like, having finally seen it, because I'd only read the script like a year or so ago. Seeing it now, I'm like, these are nothing alike.
At all.
These are completely different experiences. But there are similar themes about any time you're making movies about the world you're in that like they speak to each other for sure. But the high of them is entirely different. Yeah.
Well, the thing that's cool is like, because, you know, I say color people, because this movie isn't really a black movie. It's about Oakland, which, you know, is it's a milieu of several different races sort of interacting. I do think like black culture feels like a through line.
Absolutely.
Across a lot of the characters that we meet
in the
movie.
I think the black experience is a through line for sure.
Right. Yeah. But at the same time, you guys aren't just talking about interesting things. You're talking about them in an interesting way. Like, the narrative structure of this movie is not like other movies.
Well, we don't know how to write
Yeah, that was the...
Well, thank God,
fortunate
though.
For us.
But thank
yeah.
God, y'all. Like, the movie slips into slam poetry. The movie does things that, like, when you go to film school, you're taught, don't ever do that, because it'll never work. And that, to me, is like, it's a magic act. What do you guys hope the movie does? What do you hope people take away from it?
I think we don't, you know, I don't know what people are going to take away from it, and I don't really care. I want people, we're so far beyond what we expected at this point. Like, I want people to see it first and foremost.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, like, it's a thing to be talked about. Like, I hope it inspires people to have conversations. There's so many different entry points into all of these characters that you can really argue about them. You know, like, your experience of one character is going to be different than the person sitting next to you. So I'm always excited by things like that.
And we're not immune to it either. Like, we talk about the movie in a particular way, but, like, as people see it their own way. And, like, we're going to have our own blind spots about our own movie.
What's the most surprising comment, like, that took you by? I'll tell you mine. Yeah. People had a real issue with Sam ending up with the white dude at the end of Dear White People, and that took me by surprise.
Oh,
the animus
I knew that was coming.
But the degree of it, I didn't expect. So what have you guys gotten so far?
Something that, like, people have gotten really, like, upset.
Not even upset,
or
just
like there was a surprise. I don't know. I mean, I get so many Miles questions that I feel like I'm, like, in a Miles corner. People always think that, like I wrote Miles and he wrote Colin, and that's how you write a script. It's like, that's...
Because people, I'm sure, will think you are Miles.
Yeah, they do all the time. Yeah, the comment I get is like, oh my God, you're nothing like him. It's like,
how acting works.
It's a movie.
School. I would say black acting school, but you, Raphael. You know, you probably attended black acting school, Raphael.
Sure. If there were an acting school he attended, it would be black acting school.
What state is that in?
I don't know. Wherever Robert Townsend is throwing it.
We need to make that.
Y'all, this movie is so good. And it's not just good because it's talking about important stuff. It's also like a daring movie. You know, like, Kubrick is my house mother, and the mantra is movies should be sincere and daring. They should tell the truth, and they should do so in a new way. And this movie absolutely does this. I don't sleep. This movie's amazing. Sure. Everybody listen at home. Final little segment, all right? The show's called Don't At Me, because it's all about, you know, I'm going to let you finish, but I got a controversial thing. So anything that you guys need to get off your chest before I let you out of here? Any don't at me's for you guys?
Any don't at me?
You had one earlier, David.
Which? What did I start going
on? I don't know. A little movie about something. I don't know. Something.
Oh, my what's it called? La La Land, don't at me? I don't know. I don't know that this... I mean, if you talk to anybody who's from musical theater, if you talk to any jazz heads about Whiplash, like, fuck both those movies.
Oh, shit. Say. Okay.
And no shade on a great director. Mm-hmm. Also.
I think Damien's a genius.
I don't disagree with you.
Yeah.
But there's some, for me, and, like, acknowledging all of my blind spots, like, particularly painful blind spots in those movies, which both, to me, when I watch them, seem to be about white people saving jazz, and about like a film where the villain is a black dude with a synthesizer. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's the villain of the film. As if that's what's killing music. Whereas, like, synthesizers have been introduced into real music for the last 40 years, and then also compounded on top of that, I happen to be on Broadway when when La La Land came out, and everybody was so furious for a cast full of people who don't sing or dance, when there's a world full of people who've been grinding their whole lives. No shade on the performances. They were asked to do a thing and did it, and did it wonderfully. There are people who can do it better, who have been trained to do it better.
Well, that's David's don't at me. To anyone trying to hire me.
Diggs not in the next. Emma.
Rafael, what you got, man? Anything? You gotta get off your chest?
I don't know. I mean, if you follow my Twitter feed, man, I don't hold back shit. I'm constantly in trouble on there.
You're like, at me all you want. You don't care.
I get in so much trouble on Twitter. What have I not talked shit about this week that I want to? I can't believe Scarlett Johansson is doing that trans role. You just went through this with Ghost in a Shell. And you know what? I kind of feel like she got a pass. I kind of feel like she got to go right back to Marvel, and we were like, we're going to let that one go. Mm-hmm. We're going to let that movie go because we didn't really go see it. Mm-hmm. You know? Mm-hmm. But like, I just don't know what memo we need to send around to be like, it doesn't matter if the script says it's written this way to accommodate you. You got to read between the lines and see that it's been adapted so that you can do it instead of the person that it's for.
There is the argument for actors that you should, if you're handed a role that is great, maybe you shouldn't have to pass on it. You're right, right? Mm-hmm. But maybe right now you do because you can. Yeah.
We have to make it so that when you point out a person's blind spot, it's like, it's thank you. I think we need to like get the advertising team that came up with the Pepsi commercial to figure this out for us.
Oh, God, no.
All right,
another moment I got in trouble on Twitter.
All right, don't at me, but Democrats, it's time to stack all of the courts and impeach all of the racist presidents. So get on it or you're not getting my vote. Thank you guys for joining me.
Yeah, man.
Thank you.
This was an amazing conversation. I'm obsessed with this duo. Everybody else will be very soon. Thank you guys so much for coming in.
Thanks.
Blind Spotting, opening in select cities on July 20th and wider on July 27th.
Yes.
Don't sleep. Thank you guys for coming in. I appreciate it.
Thank you, man.
I would like to thank my guests, David Diggs and Rafael Casal, producer Gina Dalvac, recording engineers Phil Richards and Ray Guarna, my boo, baby daddy, head of programming, Gary Scott. Special thanks to Vishnu Vallabhaneni. Please subscribe, please, on Apple Podcasts or your app of choice. That's where you can think piece me. The show's over, so add away. I'm at jsim07, and I'm Justin Simeon. You've been listening to Don't At Me from the one and only KCRW.
Do you follow automotive news? Or do you just like cars and want to see what the heck's going on? Well, then you might like Donut Media's new podcast, The Big Three. Hi, I'm James Pumphrey, and every week, me and my co-host / two of my top five friends, Nolan Sykes and Joe Weber, unpack the latest and greatest in automotive news and trends on The Big Three. You'll also get a lot of laughs, hot takes, and personal insight on cars from the biggest car guys in automotive media. So, whether you're a hardcore enthusiast or just a person who goes, that's a good-looking car, check out The Big Three, available wherever you get your podcasts, or you can watch the full videos at Donut Podcasts on YouTube.